I'm Jo Muirhead, and this is the Entrepreneurial Clinician Podcast, a podcast for health professionals who want to know how we continue to serve our patients and our clients without sacrificing ourselves to the work. More than a conversation on making money or just burning out, this podcast has been created to progress conversations that we need to have to ensure that we know who we are so that we can serve those who need our help, so that we can actually be the significant difference in the world. Welcome to another episode of the Entrepreneurial Clinician Podcast. I am your host, Jo Muirhead, and today we have Cindy Doyle talking to us all the way from Texas, where it is currently a gazillion degrees. It's very, very hot, even though it's quite late in the afternoon, and Cindy has needed to put blankets up in her windows to address the amount of sunlight coming into her studio. I am so pleased to be bringing this episode with you today. Cindy Doyle, we can blame Cindy for this podcast because I have been listening to her podcast, Code for Couples, for years. It is an exceptionally incredible, valuable resource for this world. And I just love the way she has put her podcast together. So that's what this podcast has been modeled on. I've asked Cindy to come and be a part of this podcast because she's been doing the work of a health professional for a little while now. And I am keen to find out from people who have been doing the work for a while, what keeps them in the business, what keeps them in the work. So we're going to have this conversation today, and you're going to learn some fantastic things about Cindy and what makes her tick. But Cindy, before we get into answering that question, who are you and what are you putting out into the world?
Oh, who am I and what am I putting out into the world? Thank you, Jo, for having me. I really appreciate it. I think this is exciting. And yes, it is a gazillion degrees in Texas and it's 7 o'clock at night and it would be like, you know, 86. So there you go. Yeah. So it's hot. Who am I? So I am a licensed professional counselor. That is my official title, the LPC supervisor. I have a group private practice. I have my own individual private practice. I am insane because I have a quote unquote side gig that's not a side gig. Last year I realized that my side gig made as much as my therapy room did. And that was a shift for me for sure. I'm the founder of Code for Couples, which is a website originally, a company that puts out information for law enforcement officers and couples to keep their relationships safe. And I say Code for, but really we're looking at mental health and we're looking at relational health because it is the most important for officer resilience. So I started there mostly because I'm married to one and couldn't figure out what the hell was going on. So yeah, started that, have a podcast, wrote a book, thanks to Jo kicking my patootie. I don't know if I could swear on this podcast. Thanks for, you know, she kicked my butt and said it needs to be written. And so yeah, speaker for both mental health community and for the law enforcement mental health community. So that's a little bit about who I am. People are like, you're insane. I'm like, maybe, but it's all a hobby. I'm like, this is my practice and this is my hobby, which is business. So I don't know. We could talk about that. Yeah.
We will be talking about that. So Cindy, if you don't mind me asking, when did you graduate? As in what year?
1998, I graduated with my master's degree. And wait, no, that is a lie. 1995, I graduated with my master's degree. I got my license in 1998. So yes, it's been a hot minute since I graduated. And it's interesting to me how the field has changed. And as a supervisor who now supervises new clinicians, I have really had to stay on top of things. So that's been interesting. So yes, 1995. I was a young thing because I went straight through. I didn't stop. I just like went to high school. My parents were like, what? You graduated. You don't need a master's degree. I'm like, yes. So I waited tables and slung drinks to get a master's degree, which was probably good training for counseling if you think about it.
Yeah, there's slinging drinks or hairdressing. It's going to be one of the two.
One of the two. Absolutely.
Yeah. They're most of our emotional first aiders on the planet.
yes.
If we're honest. So you and I have had a similar length of time as a health professional. I graduated around the same time. I didn't need a master's degree, and I always get intimidated by the people who have got them. Because
it's more books.
It is more books and more expense. Let's just put that out there.
Yeah. So
you've been around for a while and you've just been doing the work. So my big question to you, Cindy, is how have you kept going? Like, how have you kept doing the work?
I think my short answer, if you want, like, get to keep in mind, I work with law enforcement and they like the short, direct answer, reinventing myself. That is really the short answer to this. So when I look at my career, so first of all, I started my career and I was super scared to go into like deep clinical mental health. That was like, oh, I don't know, I'm going to fail. Like, that was really what I thought. And so I played it safe. To me, it was playing safe. And I went into a field that I was kind of already in because with my bachelor's degree, I went into case management. I worked with low socioeconomic youth. I worked with unemployed individuals. And so I just continued to do that and kind of moved into a career counseling space. I then moved up into the nonprofit world and wound up being like a deputy director of an agency, wanted to stab my eyes out, burned out. Like, it was dark and deep. And the short version is that it got to a point where I had a federal investigation against me. And that was my kick in the pants from, I think, God to tell me to change.
Wow.
And I was all cleared. It was all crap. But it was the thing that got me to move and got my husband on board to allow me to move. And I went to private practice in 2008, started my own
practice. Of course, during the great global financial crisis, like many of us.
But see, I was fine, like, right? So federal grants were fine, but the nonprofit shut down, by the way. My husband was in a civil service job, so like it didn't impact us a whole lot. But yes, during the financial crisis, which is hilarious because people are like, what? No, recession. I'm like, yeah, no, mental health needs are there. So 2008, started my own private, I didn't start a private practice. I joined a private practice. 2010, started my own private practice it's a story and a podcast in itself, why that happened the way it did. And then just kind of grew from there. But what I find along the way, as far as what's kept me involved, is that I tend to get to a point where I've gotten better over the years, where I find where I'm a little resistant. And that the little voice inside my head is like, I don't want to go to work. Like, I have to start paying attention to that. And when I start paying attention to that, I have to pay attention to where my mindset is and what's going on. And so burnout is a real thing, guys. And you have to stay on top of it. I definitely, pandemic, my gosh, things shifted. I went from seeing like 25 people a week to like 35 people a week because I thought I had to like save the world. So I would like end session and cry and then like sop it back up and then jump back into session. Like, it's just been part of it for me has been reinventing myself, learning new things, always learning new things. Things are, like I said, since 1995, we didn't even learn what the DSM was when I went to school. I didn't know how to diagnose people. Because they thought that wasn't important. I don't know. But like continually learning things. There's just so much to know and so much to learn. And I think what I figured out now is go with my passion. Go with what I love and enjoy. There is enough out there in the world that I can touch somebody, impact somebody. And it's the one, right? It's that whole starfish story. Right.
Yep.
I'm not trying to make gigantic waves. I just want to save the one starfish and throw them back in the ocean. And the more ones that I throw in, the better off I am. And I think, I've grown up a lot since the beginning. So my philosophy has changed. So I think that's kind of it. Just changing, learning, focusing on the individual in front of you rather than, the line at the door.
And yeah.
How I want to change the world. There's a whole lot there as far as like embracing risks. I could go in on that too, but I'm going to stop.
That's a great answer to a question. And this is why I'm so excited and why it was important for me to include this topic of conversation both on this podcast and also in the upcoming symposium, because I think watching new people come into the professions, or the lack of people coming into the professions, I think we need to have a conversation about what has helped us be resilient thus far, what has helped us get through thus far, so that the up and coming generations can take our knowledge, our skills, our expertise, and turn it into something that's going to work for them as well. And we can't do that unless we're having these conversations. And if all we're telling the newer clinicians is, there's no pay, you'll get burnout, it's very expensive, you're going to end up with board complaints against you. And if that's all they're hearing, then we're not going to have anybody doing the work. And that is my biggest concern, is that I will selfishly get to the point of needing a health professional and there'll be nobody there to take care of me. Absolutely. And I don't want AI taking care of me. Not that I think it will, but I just don't.
Yes, I hear you. I think I'll just mention one little thing there that you said. I think a big part of that is the idea of that you don't have to have all the answers.
Yeah.
You know, the therapeutic relationship. And I think overall, when we think of health professionals, the number one thing we need to do is provide the relationship.
Yeah.
And we're so concerned about providing the solution that we lose sight of the most important thing, which is the relationship that we need to have with the people in front of us. And you know what? The rest can. I have looked at clients and said, I'm not exactly sure what we need to do here, but let's work on that together, right? And the honesty that comes with that. But doing that takes like some courage, I think, to admit that you don't know. And I don't know that everybody, especially new clinicians coming out, feel safe and comfortable doing that. That's scary. So.
Well, yeah. So that's a great conversation for a new clinician to have in supervision, or in my case, in consultation. So I still pay for clinical supervision here in Australia, ongoing, because to me it's crazy that I don't. I need somewhere to go and talk about what I've seen, what I've heard, how it's affecting me. And then I love the look in the psychologist's eyes that I go to when she goes, "You did what now?" It's like, oh, that's
and
affirming.
The blind spots, right? Like, what am I not seeing? Right?
Yeah,
that's important. Absolutely.
Yeah. So when it's easy for us as like more experienced, more seasoned health professionals to kind of have that conversation with a client and go, actually, I don't have the answers, but what I trust is that we'll be able to work it out together.
Yeah.
I would have been terrified as somebody in my first 12 months to have that conversation. I would have been like, I can't admit that. I can't say that to anybody. I'm going to be sacked tomorrow if I say it, because that was always my biggest fear. They're going to find out how sucky I am, and they'll sack me.
How much you suck. Yes.
Yeah.
They don't really know what happens behind this door.
It's exactly right. Just walk out of here with a smile.
Right.
So what are some of the things that are seasoned professionals, some of the attitudes and beliefs that we have that aren't actually helpful anymore? Can you talk into that a little bit? Like, what are some of the things that we need to call each other out on?
So I don't know what it's like around the world, but I don't think we value our new clinicians coming out. I think one of the things that we need to ditch is this idea that you've got to pay your dues. And just because we had to rake ourselves over the hot coals because the person did it before us doesn't mean that we need to continue that practice. There is enough business. And I don't know if that's out of scarcity, like, oh, I'm scared, like you don't have the knowledge, but that's crap to me. I mean, people graduate. Yes. Do they need supervision? Absolutely. But they have a freaking, at least in my world, right? In my world as an LPC, they have a master's degree, people. Like, let's make sure that they are being seen as somebody who's valuable, because if we don't value them, then the clients won't value them. And if the clients don't value them, they don't get people. And if they don't get people, they don't get their license and they get burned out. And so part of what we have to ditch is this idea of like paying your dues. It's just so old school to me. I think that's number one, is ditch that idea.
I'm going to interrupt you there, because it's most seasoned professionals will go, yeah, I've gotten rid of that. I don't say that anymore.
BS.
Yeah. Because I know it turns up for me as well, like in my clinical practice and my private practice. And I'll sit there and somebody will say something to them and I'll go, you think I'm just going to hand that to like, you think you're ready for that? Like, you haven't sweated blood yet. Like, and these thoughts come very fast. And I've coached people all over the world and they'll say to me, I love my associates. I love my pre-licensed people. I love my supervision people. And then all of a sudden they'll say, yeah, but they just don't work hard enough. Do you see that? Or is it just me?
No, I see that too. And then I think I definitely, I hear people say, you're not ready for that yet. And my part that I do, like I was thinking about something that happened this week and she, one of my associates, and she contacted me and she's like, I just don't think I'm ready for this. I'm like, yeah, you are. Come on, let's dive in. Let's jump in. That's why I'm here. Mm. That's why you have me as a supervisor. We'll consult. Mm. We'll work through this together. What can you screw up? You just got to focus on the relationship, right? We'll work on the rest. I'm like, can you be with the client? But it scares them many times that they're going to fail, which is my number two, by the way.
Yeah, go for
it. Now, it's the failure aspect. Like you and I have talked about this in different aspects in the time that we've known each other. It's the idea that, especially, I don't know about y'all, but in many health professions, it's the idea of you got to be perfect. There's going to be, you know, people, your peers watching you, they're going to be board complaints. And if you're not perfect, then the insurance companies are going to come after you. Your peers are going to come after you. You better not let them know that you screw up. And we were talking about that a little bit earlier, like, but failure is hard.
Yeah, it
is. And failing in the therapy room or in a practice room, you know, you don't go out and go, damn, I screwed that one up. I'm like, oh, can I swear?
You can. You know, and that's, as far as I'm concerned, that's not even swearing. I choose to pick that up, really.
like, damn, I just really screwed that one up. And you know, I've been doing this since 1995 and I do it all the time. There is, maybe not all the time, but I do it frequently. There are little moments that I think, I should have shut up right there and let the client do it, right? Or that was leading, or, what did I just do there? I didn't, you know, but that I think is that process that we have to have is that critical thinking process.
Yes.
But we have to, like you said, the supervision, like this idea of like, you get to this point and you don't ever need supervision. That's crap. I think we're starting to change some of that a little bit and having consultation groups. But, you know, talking to people about failure, making it okay, talking about the fact that, hey, I had a board complaint. I mean, how many people walk up and go, yeah, so I had a board complaint the other day. Like, nobody says that. And we need to get rid of that idea that needs to be closeted. And there's like this layer of shame. Like, let's work through that one too.
Oh, absolutely. I'm going to actually put that on my list of topics for the 2024, as in next year's symposium, because I really do think it needs to be talked about. This podcast is brought to you by Purple Co, the Purpose for People company. Purple Co is my private practice. Hi, I'm Jo Muirhead. I'm a rehabilitation counselor and the founder of Purple Co, the Purpose for People company, where we are all about helping people reclaim their lives through their work. Imagine for a moment that you're going along your merry way and you've got your bills taken care of and your financial future kind of sorted, and then wham, bam, you have some type of health event or injury or illness that knocks you out of work for a considerable period of time. This could be an injury. This could be an illness. This could be any manner of forced changes in your world. Well, you spend a lot of time in treatment and treatment recovery and then the recovery from the treatment. And then one day you just realize, I've got to get back to work. I want to get back to work, but what is it that I want to do? What is it I can do? And how do I navigate things like fatigue and pain and a complete change in career? How do I talk to my boss, my co-workers, my family? How do I set my family up in a way that supports me going back to work? Am I ever going to be able to earn enough? And if not, what the heck am I going to do now? Q Purple Co. That's where we shine. We work with individual people who have experienced some type of injury, illness, and trauma and are looking for that assistance they need to get a job, return to work, stay at work, or work out what their career is. We work with employers to help them manage significant absence that they may be experiencing from performing staff members, people who may not be able to turn up every day or intermittently turn up or turn up for a couple of months and then can't turn up. And there's this all this sick leave or all this leave that makes you wonder if this person is really committed. We can come in and help you sort out what's really going on with that person and work out a way to help them either be removed from that position if that's what they need and if that's what we agree to, or we might be able to find a way to help them come back to the workplace in a way that's sustainable and meaningful for both them as an employee and for you as an employer. We work with people in the NDIS scheme in Australia, the Lifetime Care and Support Authority in Australia. We work with our eye care partners, our SIRA, CIRA partners in Australia, but we also coach people all over the world and we also consult with people who pay us private pay. So if you want some assistance to return to work or even figure out what on earth that means, then please think of Purple Co. purpleco.com.au, and we would love to help you. We thank Purple Co. for being the proud sponsor of the Entrepreneurial Clinician Podcast. Without Purple Co. and the Purple Co. team, this podcast would not be possible. So failure as a health professional, though, is like we talk about being authentic, and we know that clients don't want the white face, the stoic face, the white coat. You know, they want to know that we're real people and that we can help them with a solution to their problem. But there are some limitations to our authenticity because we want to make sure that we're not putting a client in a position of harm and all of that sort of stuff. But failure for health professionals can also have really quite disastrous consequences. So we have to take seriously this whole caveat of do no harm, right? Mm-hmm. So how do we balance or how do we make sense of, oh, I stuffed that up today and holy crapola, Batman, I really stuffed that up today. Like, how do we learn? Because that's not something that we graduate with. We don't graduate with big long list that we can check off. And things change and morph over time. And so how do we make sense of that piece, Cindy?
You know, I think it goes back to kind of something, well, you mentioned like supervision. But I think part of it, too, is collaboration. That as professionals, many times as health professionals, I think we work in our rooms, right? And whether that's a clinical room or a client room or wherever you are, right? You work in a room and you do your thing and you're going from client to client, client. And when do you really like collaborate with folks? And so I think in the idea, and this is why I think it's really important for people to have, if they don't work in some kind of group, they need to connect with people and peers that can help them along the way, because there is that balance between knowing and learning what are human failures that we all screw up on and what are not. I teach a class about this a little bit. No, I do. I have a 6-hour ethics program on it. Let's just face it. And one of them was, there was this research study about how clinicians fail. And one of them was they fall asleep. And of course, everybody laughs at that one. And I was at this presentation and this guy came up and he said, Cindy, I'm the one who fell asleep. I was like, really? And he told me the story and he said, you know what? Anytime you need to use that story, please do. Because I want people to know that it happens. And I won't tell the whole story, but I'll tell a little bit of the story. So he was talking about how it was after lunch. He had had pasta. And so he's tired. And his client is, and there was a layer of shame to this, his client is blind.
Oh.
And when she's speaking, she's monotone.
Oh, yeah.
And so he found himself all of a sudden like waking himself up and he's like, the amount of shame not just that I fell asleep, but that she didn't know.
No. Yeah.
Was immense. And so when we're talking about that, we're talking about when do we screw up and when do we really screw up? And I think part of it then is also like identifying the difference between like guilt and shame.
Yes.
So is this behavior that like, oh, I need to be careful of that behavior? Or are you spinning in shame? Because if you're sitting in shame, we hide it in the dark, we stick it in the corner, it grows mold, it infests other things, right? And that's when we sit in shame as health professionals, that's when we really start screwing things up.
Because absolutely, yeah,
we don't ask for help, and we're trying to make up for something because we're trying to run away from all that shame. So, I think that's a good indicator. I think it's necessary for us to be able to talk about it. I think that's new in our field.
Yeah, that I would agree with you.
I mean, I remember just recently, like 5, 6, 7 years ago, that people were like, "Ah, you don't do EMDR? How do you do therapy?" Like it was unheard of because I didn't do this one technique that I couldn't be effective. So shame kind of runs rampant, and we have to be careful of that.
And we're very, very good at heaping shame on each other. Let's just Absolutely. Be honest about that. We as peers, I used to work in hospitals keeping nurses nursing, and I used to be completely stunned at how vicious nurses in hospitals were to each other.
Yes.
It's not just nurses. I see it everywhere.
It's everywhere. It is
everywhere. And we often weaponize words like it's unethical, you're being unprofessional. And then that just forces us to cloak ourselves in further and further shame and go, well, obviously I can't talk about this. And I certainly don't want my peers to know about it. So is it any wonder that we have, people, new clinicians or newly licensed clinicians struggling with this stuff? Because we're not being taught how to navigate it.
No, you're not being taught how to navigate it. And I think also I'm going to, kind of dog on people that have been tenured around, I think part of it too is us being willing to be okay with it. And these are culture shifts, right?
Yes.
So
nice.
When we think about a culture shift like that, it turns it around. And it's one of the things that I start with my associates when I'm talking to them, I'm like, if you're not bringing me failures, I don't think you're being congruent and honest. Like, I don't think you're being authentic if you're not telling me about your failures. So if you're not telling me about your failures, if I don't hear how you're struggling, then we're going to be having a different type of conversation, because I don't think you're not listening to yourself. And you either you think that you got it all, which you don't, or you're hiding something. So I think that as more tenured individuals, people that are mentoring, you don't have to be a supervisor. You can just be a mentor, which is where I started. I got shamed into being a supervisor by somebody, but I was fine just being a mentor to people, to younger folks, and talking about things and bringing up conversations. If we don't bring it up, they're not going to talk about it. So, I mean, people don't walk up to somebody they don't know and go, so I had a really bad moment with a client the other day. You've got to bring that up, and you've got to make it, we have to make it just a common conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not even about creating safety. It's about making it normal.
Yes, it's normalizing it. Absolutely.
Yeah, that completely is exactly normalizing it. So I've recently had a situation with somebody that I provide ongoing supervision to. She was so upset because of the way a situation turned out with a client. And I went, really? Okay. So I'm hearing that didn't go as well and you've learned from it. She goes, yeah. And now the client's disengaged. And I said, okay. And she's like, so what do you want to do about that? She goes, I need to re-engage with the client. I'm going, no, I actually don't think you do. I think the client's gone and made a choice, and that's okay.
And that's okay.
And you have admitted that you haven't done anything that's going to cause this person harm. You've actually empowered this person to make a choice.
Yeah.
And she went, oh, yeah, it's not the choice you wanted them to make, but you've actually empowered them to make a choice.
Isn't it crazy? Like when you're like, yeah, you'll get fired.
Yes.
And that's okay. Like, I've been fired so many times. I'm like, I'm okay. I'm like, I'll even tell a client, like, maybe this isn't working for you. And they look at me like, are you are you quitting me? I'm like, yeah, I'm just giving in. It's a choice, you know? But yeah, you know, we all get fired, but people don't talk about that. I mean,
no,
we need to do a podcast on getting fired.
All right. Let's book that in for November. I've got this symposium to get through, Cindy. Let me just deal with that.
Hey, yeah, just put it on your to-do list.
Okay, I want to talk about reinvention because I know that there are so many people who want to reinvent themselves, and they've heard you describe yourself as a private practice owner, as somebody who does private practice. You're a speaker, you're an author, you're a podcaster. I know that you're going into law enforcement agencies all over your country training. So you're like a corporate trainer and corporate wellness professional as well.
I contract with two national nonprofits as a subject matter expert. Yes.
There you go. So the reinvention piece, so the first thing I want to ask is, and you're all going to go duh, but let me just put this in context. Were you reinventing yourself in the first 12 months of being a clinician?
No.
Thank you. So, because the reason I say that is because we're in such a rush to do the next thing, and the rush to get the side hustle up, and the rush to become the subject matter expert, and a rush.
Can we just be health professionals for a while?
Thank you.
There's nothing wrong with just being a health professional, folks. Like there is absolutely nothing wrong. I have my business partner. Okay. I have a business partner and she has a totally different lifestyle than me. And she goes to the office and she works 10 to 5 every 4 days a week. She works 10 to 5. And then she goes home and she's with her wife. Like, that's it. Like, she plays on the weekend. She doesn't do anything. She doesn't care about speaking. She's like, I have a glorious life. She's in London currently. Like, there are things, right? There's nothing wrong with doing that, but we've made it this whole thing of like, oh, well, you know, you gotta do this other business thing. And side hustles are not easy. They're just not. So
no, they're really not.
Y'all, it's totally okay if you don't do it. Like, it's totally okay if you are just a health professional and serving the world in that way.
And serving yourself in that way by like absolutely. The lifestyle that you were talking about with your business partner. It's okay to want that.
Yeah, she goes home and has dinner and plays with her dogs.
Yeah, so it's okay to want that.
It's okay.
The work is hard. Like the work we do is hard. Mm-hmm. And it's rewarding and it's incredibly fulfilling. And we don't spend a lot of time reflecting on that because we're in a rush to get to the next thing. Like, I've got to become a speaker.
It's the scarcity thing. I was talking with one of the girls in my office yesterday. We were having lunch and she's like, well, you know, all that push in 2020, like now that you're home, you can start your side hustle. And of course, I was jealous of people that were cleaning out their closet. I'm like, screw that. Do you know how busy I am? But we were talking about that idea of like, it's this push to be like running around with your hair on fire. And you know, part of the reason why I got into this was it's like to have freedom and flexibility, right? And do I have that after all this time? Yeah, I have some freedom and flexibility. And I also have this thing I want to do to impact the world.
Yeah.
You know, it's not about me. And you taught me this, actually. This is something that you taught me. Like, I had to really think about my why. Because initially my why was like, oh, it's because I want to have a side gig. That's really what my initial why was, because I thought that somehow I was going to make better money, more money, because that's a lot of times what we're doing. And if y'all want to talk to me about opening a group private practice or starting a podcast, I may talk you out of it. I'm just saying. Okay. So, you know, part of it is that why. And so that moved around for me. You said something, I don't remember what, but I realized, you know what? It's because of all the other people that went through the struggles that I went through as a law enforcement officer that I feel selfish if I don't share what I know. And that my why is to impact another community. And that's bigger than me. And so it's because it's bigger than me that I keep showing up and I do it. And I don't know if that's where I am. I think you asked a question in there and I got totally off track, and that's all right.
You've answered the question. But I think that helping us understand that the side hustle culture for health professionals is not necessarily as healthy as we might think it is. And that again, that just speaks into, do we feel like we're doing enough significant work, which is a question you need to be actually asking yourself, probably with your supervisor. If it's about income, then that's a question we need to be asking about value, worth, and capacity to pay the wages. Like, we know that health professionals are not receiving the type of wages and income that are comparable with people with other master's levels degrees. We're not going to change that in this podcast. But if we don't start empowering ourselves and each other to have those conversations, nothing is going to change.
Absolutely.
And if you're in a position listening to this podcast today and you kind of go, oh, thank God I don't have to have a side hustle. I don't have to have seven income streams. I don't have to, I can just turn up and be a health professional. Please own it. Please come into the future-proofing Facebook group, future-proofing health professionals Facebook group, and let us know so we can high five you and say, oh, we want to celebrate you. And if you are feeling burnt out because you're trying to manage, you know, learning how to do this work plus learning how to do another piece of the work while you're learning how to be the human that you want to be while learning how to have a family. Yeah, that's why you're burning out. And we don't want to shame you. We just want to help you make different decisions. So that's, Cindy is nodding away going, there won't be any shame. We just want to help you make different decisions. This is really cool. This conversation is going to be going over into the symposium where we've got the fantastic Alyssa asking three seasoned health professionals about how they have stuck it out and what are some of the attitudes and beliefs that we need to let go of. Like failing and the need for ongoing supervision. Cindy, if people wanted to find out more about you, read your book, listen to your podcast, how do they do that? How do they find you?
So pretty much everything is Code for Couples. So it's CODE, the number four couples. And so Code four means everything is copacetic and fine, as opposed to Code three, where everything is burning down. So we're going for Code four as far as law enforcement, mental health, and relationships. So codeforcouples.com. My Instagram is codeforcouples.com. Facebook is the same thing. LinkedIn, which I'm active on, gets a little bit more complicated. It's like Cindy Doyle LPC, I think.
That's okay. We'll work it out.
Something like that. The book is on Amazon. The podcast is on all the platforms. It's Code for Couples as well. The book is not called Code for Couples. It's called Hold the Line, How to Protect Your Law Enforcement, The Essential Guide to Protecting Your Law Enforcement Relationship.
It is an outstanding book. If you have law enforcement professionals in your world, or you've worked with them, or you're working with them, or you want to work with them, you need this book. Because not only does it just talk about relationship, for me, it helped me understand the culture of law enforcement personnel. And if you are one of these people who is into, I don't want to have anything to do with the police because they treat people so appallingly. We know that, which is why we need people like Cindy inside law enforcement agencies, helping them learn how to do their jobs differently so that our communities are genuinely safer and not becoming fearful of the police. So we will have Cindy's contact details in the show notes. You can come and join Cindy at the 2023 International Future Proofing Health Professional Symposium, where she will not only be a panelist, she will also be facilitating, hosting the party of the last session of the entire thing, which is great for me. And I'm so appreciative of her being a part of that. If you wanted to have a conversation with Cindy or check her out a little bit more, join the free Facebook group, Future Proofing Health Professionals. She's in there, she's active, got a question, she will answer it for you. Now, Cindy, when we get together again in real life, in real person life,
yes,
and we're at a cafe,
yes,
what am I ordering for you?
A macchiato.
Oh, just because you want to know what it is, right?
No, I know what a macchiato, I make them all the time at work. Is that what you, no, wait. I mean, we're talking about a coffee cafe. We're not in Holland, right?
We're at
Amsterdam
cafe.
At a cafe, right? I just want to clarify that.
So the macchiato is in this little cup, right?
Yes. Yes, macchiatos are tiny. I love me a macchiato. That's all I need. I don't know fancy, fluffy stuff.
Yes, I don't do frothy milk. Anywho, wonderful. Cindy, thank you so much for being a part of this podcast with me. For everybody listening, go forth, find Cindy, and until next episode, go be your awesome self. And that is another episode of the Entrepreneurial Clinician Podcast done. I just want to say a big thank you to all of the people who make this podcast possible. Debbie, Annie, Vince, and Jen, you are my A-team. Without you, I couldn't make this work. And in the spirit of respect, please ask for and receive permission before you use any of my intellectual property, because you know what? Not giving appropriation to creators is just not cool. Until next episode, go be your awesome self. Oh, and before you forget, please make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. That's kind of important. Go do that.